Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV and movies and other things. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by the rest of my X-Wing squadron. Guy English is here. Hi, Guy.
I've got it. I'm going to hold it together. It's okay.
I'm not fully in a really good explosion for that. John Moltz is also here.
For the time being, anyway, yes. Until we make that final run at the trench.
Slightly defeatist, guys. Come on, get with it. I know it's one in a million
John
shot.
John Moltz is the character that had one scene with Luke on Tatooine.
Yeah, he's Biff Darkless.
It's the big mustache that gives it away.
Sorry, I'm laughing at Biff Darklighter still over here because that's Biff amazing.
Yeah.
If we did episode titles, this episode would be titled Biff Darklighter.
Biff Darklighter, for sure.
But we don't. Because we are here to recap this week's episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 6, Episode 7, Told Ya. And I think I have thrown myself on the tender mercies of my co-hosts who have allowed me to recap this week's
episode. We will be
gentle
again. This time.
Thank Come you. On. Thank you.
Unless it goes into hour 3.
Yeah.
All right. So... this week we pick up kind of where we left off last week with Gemma, Fitz, and Enoch teleporting off of the Chronicon ship, but they show up back on Kitson because apparently the ring is just a, like, that'll, remember that snap back button in the Safari browser? That's all it does. Yep. An alien immediately takes their disc and teleports away, so they have no way out. While they are waiting for an opportunity to get out, they are grabbed by the thugs of Mr. Kitson. And eventually interrogated and by Anthony Michael Hall, who is Mr. Kitson. Good for him.
Oh, that's who that was. Okay.
He threatens to kill Fitz and Simmons, and he puts them, basically ends up putting them in guillotines where they have to hold the blades over their head, and the loser,
it was,
you know,
a hilariously low-tech trap.
It really was.
Effective.
I'm like, wait a second. we're in space, and this is... I could do this in my backyard. I just need three volunteers.
Please don't. First of all, I should note that they are professionals in a controlled environment. Do not attempt this. Yeah. No.
I don't have the baskets. That's my... It's,
a woman who we saw earlier at the bar in Kitson trying to recruit a crew expresses an interest in Fitz and Simmons and basically holds Kitson at knife point until he agrees to rig the game and sell them to her. We learn her name is Iza, I think, and she's looking for scientists to find an artifact that someone stole from Earth, but she doesn't have a ship. She is also...
Wait, you skipped an important point. Daisy loses another boyfriend.
That's right. That's the guy who
that
hit on her
Daisy's
in the bar.
Boyfriend.
Yeah,
well,
that's right.
You know what I mean. Close enough.
And there are some funny scenes where Gemma complains that the bar looks much dingier when you don't have the psychedelic puffs.
Yeah.
And Fitz is very confused.
Yeah. And Fitz is like, what are you talking about? This is awful. And she's like, no, I kind of had a good time. Like, you can tell that she's got kind of fun memories of it.
Right.
They're looking for a ship. They eventually go back to the freighter that Fitz was stowing away on and kind of browbeat the remaining crew there to take them to Earth. And then we lose Enoch, who has departed this week, but not before handing Fitz a Captain Marvel brand communicator that he can use to reach him. And they have a touching goodbye where he says, I will not miss you very much. I am bluffing.
Oh, wait, was it the same communicator?
No, it wasn't. That was a joke. That was just a joke.
Yeah, no, just
same idea.
Well,
same idea, not
been,
the same
and I just
thing.
Didn't notice. So that,
yeah. No, that's a pager. This is an actual space communicator.
Looked like a,
I didn't. Whatever. I just noticed an object. I'm like, okay, fine.
It's a space cell phone.
A modified iPhone 1.
Yeah.
In our other plot thread at the lighthouse, May has returned with Sarge and Snow. Daisy is way too freaked out by Sarge looking like Coulson, and it's just out. Yo-Yo is pretty pissed about Keller's death still. She goes and interrogates Jocko, who is coughing a bunch and feels like might need medical attention, but he refuses it because of loyalty to Sarge. Mac interrogates Sarge and basically says, by the end of the day, I'll be the one in charge. They are playing little mind games with each other. Mac confronts Sarge with the Coulson hologram and tries to play on his loyalty or lack thereof. When Trevor goes in to check on Jocko, who seems to be unconscious, he starts breathing fire, which apparently is Sarge's exit plan. Mac and Quake take him down. Meanwhile, Yo-Yo and May have been dispatched to take out two Shrike hosts that they have found. They put them in the same containment unit, which seems like a mistake, as I've written in my notes. They immediately start screaming.
That's a mistake anyway, regardless of what happens. Don't do that. Why would you do that?
Separate them. Come on.
Yeah.
They start screaming and then turning into giant crystals and everything. Sarge apparently knew this was going to happen. They can't jettison the containment unit because the Shrike will like kill everybody wherever it lands. Sarge makes a deal for Mac for his team and his truck in exchange for telling him how to stop it. Turns out it's cold. So they open the bay doors to the Zephyr and freeze the Shrike, which shatters it. There's a cool scene where Yo-Yo uses her robot hand to stop the crystal from impaling one of our shieldlings.
Is it just me, or if I remember correctly, a great man, Khan Noonien Singh once said, it is very cold in space. Why did they not go into space to get rid of this thing?
Right, exactly.
Well, it's far away.
On a spaceship.
It's far away. You gotta. They only had a limited amount of time.
Okay. Do I get some points for dropping a Khan reference?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Cool. Okay, so long as we're keeping score.
That was a long Khan.
It's a long walk for a con joke.
Back in the lighthouse HQ, everybody's kind of puzzled about what to do next, and everybody kind of looks at Sarge, who gives a smug told ya. We also have a C plot in which Deke is trying to impress Daisy with his vintage sneakers and the fact that he's now super rich, but he also ends up finding out that Fitz died and was lost and is pretty pissed, and tells Mac that he was upset that he wasn't given the chance to go and help find him. He instead puts him on to figuring out Sarge's tech, which is how they track down the Shrike hosts. There's also an interesting bit here that I couldn't remember if we had heard before, where Mac says they've checked the DNA and Sarge's DNA is the same as Coulson's.
The doctor did that.
Benson.
But nobody knows why, including Sarge, we get the idea.
No, he seems a little flipped out by it. Well, I don't know. He seems to think that they're running some kind of ploy, but he's as confused as they are as to why this would be a thing. So
There you go.
Did Deke and Daisy ever hook up?
No, not really.
He's just
soft
like
on her for a while.
Okay, he's just got puppy dog eyes for her.
Because
I did
she's
like the way
impressed.
She was treating him. It's like I'm working.
she's just not impressed with him.
I liked about that scene actually was that she's been around since the beginning and she's clearly pretty superior now. Like when she starts, she's not even an agent. And now she's just walking around telling people what to do and checking in on her iPad on their progress on fixing
stuff.
She's management.
She was supposed to be the director. Like Coulson had tried to make her director last year, but it didn't take.
Yeah, yeah. And I like it. I think it's great that she's just walking around being the boss. And
yeah,
I feel
kind
like
of
she's
annoyed
kind
by
of
this guy. You know, like she's being very patient.
So. She hasn't exactly taken May's job, but they're kind of in the same level now.
Right.
Yeah. I like that bit as well, where. You know, it's the reunion at the beginning with Sarge in there, and Daisy's like, this would be a pretty awkward time to hug, huh? Would she just not do that?
Yeah.
And
in the early seasons, like, hugging May is just a no-go.
Right. But they've all been
now
so
it's
much.
Like, you know, now you're like, okay, these two could definitely hug, but not right now. Like,
I enjoyed her reaction when, you know, she's freaked out seeing Sarge looks like Coulson, and then when he opens his mouth and makes kind of like a snarky comment. You can kind of see in her just like, oh no, I'm not doing this.
That is
too damn weird. And I thought that was a nice little moment from Chloe Bennett there to just be like, oh, yep, we've seen a lot of weird stuff, but this is too far. Sorry.
Yeah. She's really grown as an actress too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
She's just great. I like her a lot. I mean, obviously, she looks older, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that she looks more mature and more put together and more competent now, which
and confident,
great.
Too, right? Like, that's a big part of her.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
She's got these powers, and she's mastered them at this point.
Right. So, you know, she's standing in that room, and she's basically the powerhouse there, even though Mac is, like, five times her size.
Right.
You know. he just, that guy eats like 8 burgers for breakfast, but you know, she's still the one that's got the
and never gains a pound.
Well, I think he works out a
he's
little
probably got yeah, a right, salmon, he's probably got thing. A salmon ladder somewhere. Yeah.
Right, yeah. but when a random dude turns into a dragon, it's like, hey Daisy, can you just take care of this idiot?
I did like that. That was a bizarre twist I did not see coming. Nope. But B, I enjoyed that. Like, Sarge seemed pretty confident in like he was getting out, and that was kind of his plan. And except for Daisy is basically the wild card that nobody counted on.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, also, I love that it's just speaking about Mac and Daisy. Daisy basically takes him out, and then Mac is just using a fire extinguisher, and he's like, I'm glad it could be of help.
<It's just> like, I was glad. I was really worried they were going to kill our previous Biff of the Week honoree, Trevor Kahn.
You can't kill Kahn.
It was close, though. They had a couple shots where they would do the brief firing
for him as well.
And cut away, and they were like, oh no, they killed him! They killed Trevor!
But I know, well, it's just the way the camera angle was, and I think it was a little bit of deceptive editing.
Yeah, I think it was a fake-out.
I don't think necessarily Sarge and, what's his name?
Pop Jocko? Guy?
What's the big guy's name?
Jocko.
Dragon Man.
Jocko.
They're not out to kill people. Necessarily,
but they won't let anybody get in their way either.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
Like, they won't shy away from it, but they're not like,
yeah,
right. But there's no reason for him to roast him alive. If you're going to cower in a corner while I burn down the door, fine. Like, just do that.
You're not trying to stop.
I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and this is the continuing. You know, certainly a lot of what was, teased at the beginning of the season in terms of Clark Gregg's character was that he was a bad guy, and well, you know, there's certainly a big element of that. I think we've all learned that, you know, that a lot of that is positioning, right? It's not so much that he's a evil character as he is somewhere else on the alignment spectrum, right? Like, if Coulson was lawful good, Sarge is maybe more like a chaotic neutral or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I can see Coulson making these same decisions, right? Like, when Matt goes to him and he's like, look, your guy is needs medical attention. And if you don't help him, he's going to die. If you don't help us, we can't help him, and he's going to die. He knows. Sarge knows that guy's going to be okay and be breathing fire in no time. And so it's when he's sort of callous and being like, well, look, I'm still not going to help you. It's not that he thinks that his guy is going to die. It's that he knows that his guy's going to be okay and help break him out.
Right. It's
and the calculus there is very different, right? That is a calculus that you could see Coulson doing.
Right. And I think that's the thing that we're meant to sort of start taking away from this more and more is whatever the relationship between them, they are kind of, and it's an overused cliche, but I'll say it anyways, they are kind of two sides of the same coin, right? Like they are, there is a certain amount of Coulson in this character, whether both literally, we don't know yet, like what his origins are, but also in terms of the way they've characterized him, he is not like a totally different character. There's something very similar, like even his sort of snarky comments, right? Like he sounds and it's not just, I think, that Clark Gregg couldn't play a more distinct or farther flung version of the character if he
could
wanted
sure.
to or needed to, but I think that's not what they're going for.
Right.
Yeah.
They want him to be similar enough. Well, I mean, they may have it may be him in some way,
right?
Which we might find out later, but also I think they want to have him similar enough that it's creepy.
Right. Yeah.
I think to some degree, this is the Coulson that we, sorry, not that this physically is the same Coulson. This is how Coulson looks when you are on the other side of the of the conversation from him, right?
Right. All the people go up against S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. Well, yeah, this is what they see. Like, it's this opaque. This sure. And, yeah, it's not entirely accurate, but
I mean, he did kill that guy. Which
he
was
killed
not,
that guy. Yeah. I mean, and they were didn't they kill? They killed some people in the jewelry store, right?
I don't know if they ever actually killed anyone.
I thought
they blew up a building.
They did blow up a building.
I don't necessarily mean the choices. I mean him negotiating, like the scenes with him and Mac. I think that is the Coulson that you would see if you were on the other side of the conversation of a lot of these S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes.
Yeah, I give you that.
Like, just a quiet confidence, not threatening, just being like, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm going to be running this joint, and see ya. like, there's no torture, there's no agony, there's no telling people off. There's just a quiet confidence. And even when plans fail, like Dragon Man gets taken out, he's still okay with it. He's like, all right, I'm still rolling. And it's that kind of confidence that I think mirrors the Coulson that we've known previously.
Yeah.
One game I did want to play with you guys is I want you to write down how many steps ahead you think Sarge is over our SHIELD team.
All right, I'm holding
reveal
up a number of fingers.
Right. Okay, Dan, you go first.
I think he's four steps ahead.
John?
I was going to say five.
Oh, okay.
I think right, he's two steps ahead. I think he's two steps ahead.
All right, wow.
I think he's a little on his heels. I think he knows more about the Shrike, but he's like, there's not super confidence that he's going to be able to hold this thing. So,
well, and let's remember too, I think what comes through here a lot in Sarge's point to Mac, especially with the Shrike, is Mac is focused on saving people, and Sarge has basically kind of given that over as a lost cause, right? He thinks, right. Mm-hmm. You got to kill them. That's the only way to stop them. And the more time
he's
spent
more
trying
interested
to save
in
people,
saving worlds,
right?
Than
and even
people.
Even
right.
There, I think he is, you know, he's trying, but like a lot of times we don't get the implication whether or not he's destroyed the world or not. There is some suggestion of that in the conversations that's had. But
well,
I think,
they say where he goes, the worlds get destroyed, but that just means that he might have failed. Rather
well,
than,
but
that's
somebody,
what I, that's how I took it. That's
I,
how I, took
I
it,
agree
they
with
were
that.
Not successful.
I agree with that, but there is literally a line. I can't remember who says it, whether it's May or Yo-Yo, but somebody says, like, the world's going to be destroyed, possibly by Sarge, and then continues onward. And so I think we're meant to think the team doesn't know whether or not they are.
Oh, the team definitely doesn't know.
Right.
No,
but I think the implication to us is that they are trying to wipe out the Shrike and kind of cutting their losses.
Right. Well, I mean, we've had private time with a bunch of those characters, right? And
right.
I don't get the sense that they're like, you know what, burn the world. I get the sense that they're save the world at all costs. And
right,
if not,
we
get out, you know, like just do the most damage and.
And what we don't really know is the motivation, right? Like, we get a little bit with Jocko in this episode. He talks about his family and how, like, they destroyed his world and all of that. But we don't know.
How good was that scene? Man, that was great.
Yeah, sorry. I like that character a lot. Yeah. I think that actor is fantastic.
Well, I like the way they teased him out, too. I mean,
yeah.
Because he started out that you thought he was just, like, he couldn't speak. And now he's this fairly
philosophical
character.
Yeah.
He felt like Grodd. He felt like Grodd from Superman.
Yeah,
too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh no, the who's the,
not
the,
Grodd,
the big one?
Zod's
General Zod's guy,
like boot guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What I can't remember the guy's name, but
Lieutenant Grodd. Zod. Grodd's a griller, but not him. Yeah.
But
anyway, like no.
But I'm piecing this out, like, what we don't really know is the overall motivation of this team, right? Like, we get the idea that maybe Sarge has gone around and collected these people from worlds that have been destroyed, but we don't know why he's the one who's in charge of this or what his deal is, right? Like, that's sort of the big open question is why is he trying to kill the Shrike? Like, what is his skin in the game there?
Right.
And I think that's kind of where we are interleaving with this whole, like, how is he related to Coulson thing.
I wasn't even sure if he knew.
Yeah, I don't know. He's Sarge, right? Like, Sarge is a, you know, a sergeant is a NCO who is in charge of, like, a small platoon, but they're not an officer. They're not somebody who is making strategy, right? Like, they are a grunt. They are someone who is kind of, like, you know, tactics, not over big picture strategy thing. So does that imply there is a some sort of larger organization to which he reports? I don't know. This has been an interesting season, I think, in terms of teasing out these plot threads. Because
wait, just before we get off Jocko, I love that he's a baker. That whole setup is amazing.
Yeah.
And
that's
then he's the runt of the litter.
Yeah.
He's the runt of the litter, and that he's I taught him how to bake. It's like, it's perfect. Man, yeah. I really like that character. And that actor is playing it incredibly well. Mm-hmm. Given that you'd think that, like, you know what, I'm a big aping guy, I'll probably just play big AP roles. It's like, wow, that's got... No, well, you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, no, I do.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, there's a cast for those kind of people, right? And this guy actually has really great acting chops, and he's amazing. It's hard to act sensitive like that when you know the next scene you're going to be breathing fire on people and being a big Hulk. And he does it, and it plays it well. And it is, like, I keep bringing up casting, but I mean, they do just such a terrific job on the show. Just the storytelling is well done, and the people they get to inhabit these characters are almost impeccable. And
yes,
it's great.
I don't know, based on the overall, so we're past, I think, the halfway mark in this season. I've seen suggestion that it is also broken into two sections, which seems interesting because it's only 13 episodes, but it could be a shorter arc at the back. The next two weeks are listed as a two-parter. So next week is Collision Course Part 1, and the following week is Collision Course Part 2, which I've seen suggested is sort of the end of this arc. And it seems like we have built a lot towards, you know, dealing. Sarge has teased the Shrike boss is showing up, right? And they're going to try to kill him. So how much longer do you really want to drag us out to getting there? I'm wondering if some of the stuff with the character that Fitz and Simmons have now encountered is set up for what's going to be in the back half of the season. There was like the talk about the artifact, right? Is that something that's linked in with this plot, or is that like a setup for the back half of the season? I'm not sure, but it seemed not quite connected.
Do you remember when Time Traveling Dad did a two-parter, but part two went first and then part one went second?
That was brilliant.
That was amazing.
That was brilliant for a time traveling show.
I know, they really kind of nailed it.
No one had ever done it before, though.
They were so far ahead of their time, which is...
Yeah, literally ahead of their time.
Yeah. But as for the artifact and that ship, that is interesting. I did like that it just, you know, whatever, serendipity, she happens to be going back to Earth. That part of it is just so full of joy and silliness. I love it. Just the idea of like guillotines and space monsters, like that is a different show. And it is sitting alongside like, oh yeah, everybody killed and my family and I'm a baker. Like it's, I don't know how you mix all of this stuff up together, but they've done a really,
it kind of works.
Job.
Kind of works.
Yeah. I don't know what the back end of the thing looks like. It's interesting that there's a two-parter. I mean, I don't know how you resolve the Shrike, right? Like, well, they say that the creator's coming. Is she the creator? Probably not. She seems a little...
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. But
I mean, having to buy a ship seems like...
Yeah, right.
I think a lot of the previous seasons, they've done a good job of segueing from one into the other, where the second or third sections of the plot are kind of like have this pivot point where you switch, you know, change gears, and it's still like it feels like a continuity from the whole overall season, but it's like as you step back a little bit, you're like, oh, I see how this makes a little arc, but it still has resonance with stuff that came earlier. So, you know, like for example, last season with the time travel and coming back, and they're still sort of fighting the aliens, but it was like, you know, it's the whole thing linking into the destruction of the world, etc. Like, it's an interesting, they do a nice job of interleaving those, and it doesn't feel like this story ends, new story begins, right? Like, it's there's
I mean,
a little
certainly
more
bringing a bunch of people back from space has, you know, reunited stuff in some ways. And this is, I've been really enjoying it, but it's a little bit I just want to call it out a little bit. All of the space stuff so far has just served to shuffle around who's actually stuck out in space.
Right.
That's all it's done. It's been fun. I've loved it. It's amazing. But if you look at it on paper, it's like, okay, well, we really want Fitz and Simmons out in space. I guess gambling on a kitten planet? Like, it's weird. So
some of it's a little bit time-wasty in order to just prevent them from being back.
Hang on a second. Yes, it is time wasty, but that is time that I would spend over and over and over again. I would watch that 100 times over.
It's not,
I love it. But in terms of actually doing stuff, it's, you know, shuffling the deck a little bit.
Right. Yeah. That feels like a lot of that was both set up and then denouement from, so we could have the episode, last week's episode with Fitz and Simmons, you know, as the stars, right? A lot of it was just sort of, you know, we need to get these characters together so we can have this, and now we need to resolve this and like bring our characters home, but we can't quite do it. Like, we couldn't just immediately have Enoch teleport them back to Earth, because that would feel like kind of a cheat.
Right.
But that's fine. Any last thoughts before we go into our ritual? All right, let's do it, guys.
I hate seeing somebody get the better of Mac.
Yeah, that's true.
Wait, who got the better of Mac?
Sarge.
Sarge does.
Oh, just outmaneuvered. Oh, sorry, I thought you meant beat him up somehow. No, yeah.
No. Just like, yeah. No, I mean, I don't think he could, but...
No, he definitely could not.
It is interesting, right, because Mac has... It's not that he's not confident in his role as the director, but there's always kind of, I think, that thing in the back of his head where he feels, you know, he has some imposter syndrome, I think, basically, that, like,
yes,
he's not doing the job
anybody
Coulson
that's good
done.
At their job has that feeling, and he is good at his job.
Especially when you have a guy who stands there and looks like the guy whose job you took, right? Like,
yes.
That's got to be a bit of a screw with your 100%. Mind situation.
Also, and, he does not know what he's dealing with. Like, so right. He got maneuvered, not because of failures of his own decision-making process, or failures of his team, or his failure to anticipate events. He got maneuvered because he simply didn't understand what he was dealing with.
Right.
Right.
Sarge does. And that's what Sarge knew that he had over him. And Mac was trying desperately to get that out of him the entire episode. It didn't work until it was really, really needed. Sarge got it over on him. Sarge beat him. For sure, 100%. But I don't necessarily blame Mac for what he did. I don't know what he could have done more.
Yeah, I don't either, really.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sure he's going to beat himself up.
Right.
But right.
I don't know what
more could you have done? Like,
I hate to see him lose.
Yeah. Me too. He's just right. Such a good-hearted guy. There's a chance
for him to get it back. You know, you got to go down on the mat if you're going to have that, you know, come from behind victory. So,
long game, he's going to win. Come on. He's Mac.
I would think so.
Yeah, but yeah, that does suck, and it's kind of a bummer.
All right,
even when it's a guy with the face of Coulson, that you could be like, yeah, okay, that's kind of satisfying. But
yeah, right.
Still, yeah, don't beat up Mac. Come on.
All right, let's let's do our ritual, guy.
So new rating system. There is only Biffs.
Biff 1, Biff 2, Biff 3.
No, we don't even enumerate them. This
simplified the rating system.
Yeah. Well, if Johnny Ive is out, I'm in. There's only one rating system. It's Biff.
It's a simple, beautiful rating system.
Chamfered edged.
It's either a
system.
Biff, mm-hmm. or we just didn't talk about it. So one or the other. Okay. Biff good, John Jr. boring, Alex just like a wet dishcloth that you found under your sink. This episode is a Biff. It's really exciting. I enjoyed it. I think every episode of this season so far, I've just really, really been enjoying the show. It's got enough of the sci-fi, Star Trek-y, even Farscape flavor for me to just really enjoy it. And it's got enough good character moments, including Dragon Man being sad that he can't bake bread anymore. Yeah. It's a good show. I like it. This episode was good. We may need some variance in how we rate things, but in general, just a really, really strong show. This is definitely a Biff.
John?
Yeah, I'm going to give it another one because it's just been a really good season and... not necessarily. I mean, coming after last week's was so amazing. It's not quite as good as that one, but but it's still completely solid.
Right, that's where I'm coming in with the variance. But
yep,
you can't knock this one. You can't do that. You can't do last week's every time. So
right, yeah. There's the shades of it, but you know, I agree with you guys. It's Biff. It manages. I mean, again, I think one of the great things about S.H.I.E.L.D. as a show and the way it's structured is it feels very much more of a piece. Like they've really leaned into, you know, this is a show that leans hard into continuity in the way that even Arrow and the CW shows don't, right? Where you always have to have your villain of the week and sort of like a, it has a slight formula to it. I think what's nice about S.H.I.E.L.D. is it just feels like one long continuous story. And sometimes installments are more exciting than others, but like, I think this week's episode is a lot, is very heavily plot driven, right? We've had the strike sort of hanging off screen as something that we don't really understand, and it was time to start unraveling some of those secrets and sort of mechanics, and a lot of forward movement happens in this episode. And I think that tends to be the case with a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, is that they always feel like they're moving, even if it's more about the characters than the plot. But after last week's very heavy character installment, it was nice to have an episode that was really about moving all the plot forward and starting to answer some questions and set us up for wherever we're heading. So, yeah, I think this one was a solid installment. And thumbs up.
No, it's Biff.
Biff.
You don't say that.
Biff's up.
So don't wait, start, I will say
another rating system.
Yeah,
two no, Biff.
We've
thumbs.
Got enough. We've got
it's
enough.
It's too late.
Yeah, we've already got three. You know, three stages on that dial. Come on, we can't handle anymore. To be honest, the crystallization effect that the Shrike have, I think it's a little overly ambitious for the show. Specifically when they show that guy tearing apart and they keep doing it in the previously on package. It's not a good effect. I'm sure they spent a lot of money on it, but it doesn't look right. It's not great.
It's creepy, though. I find it creepy.
It is creepy.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with that. The scene this week, which we didn't even talk about, where S.H.I.E.L.D. officer like shoot them until they go down, and then he just gets impaled. Like, I was like, that was pretty...
That's good, and he gets impaled through the neck. Yeah, I get it. So some of it works, definitely. Specifically, I'm thinking about like when there's a body lying on the ground and it just starts getting torn apart. It looks a little weird, and they keep putting it in the previously package. Do you know what? I am reaching at this point to find things to say about the show that are not just entirely glowing.
You can leave it there. Don't bother. Yeah. Just don't.
It's a testament to the show that I'm actually trying, because I want to critique it. I really do. And it's, you know,
we're having
pretty
fun.
Great.
We're here and having a good time. All right. Let us do some superhero sweep.
Bong.
Bong. That's the superhero sweep sound.
Boing.
It's not, but yeah. I signed up this week, since my fiance is away. I signed up to the DC Universe for the week free trial, but mainly because I wanted to binge Young Justice season 3.
Oh man, yeah, I saw you say that, and I'm kind of jealous. I'm trying to figure out how to get that up here in
I don't know
in the where, land of the free.
I don't know where Canada Day can see that. I loved the first two seasons of that show, and it was a tough sell in some ways, because I came to it after having consumed all of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, which are both also fantastic. And Young Justice is not; it's in a different universe. And what makes it kind of difficult times is trying to remember which character, like, for example, I think Wally West is the Flash in Justice League, but he's Kid Flash in Young Justice. So there are slight permutations, but it feels to me like the spiritual successor to Justice League. It has the same kind of heart and isn't afraid to both go wacky at times and also to get sort of a little bit on the darker side. It's not nearly as dark and gruesome as some of the TV movies, you know, or whatever, the direct-to-video movies that they've done for DC stuff. I think it's actually a lot more kid-friendly than these, but
typically not great though.
Right.
I was hesitant, to be perfectly honest, to watch something called Young Justice. I watched both seasons. It is a teen angst drama with superhero fights. And I think it actually works really well. It's actually well done.
It's very complex too, though. I mean, like,
it's more complex than you would give it credit for, given the cover art kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like the book judged by cover X is not applicable here. It is actually a good show. The second season with the manipulation, the aliens that are
the
doing
reach.
The reach.
Yeah, that's and that's excellent. Also, I think one of the things that serves it well is between each of the seasons, there are time jumps. And so we see our characters evolve and grow because, you know, in the first season, you know, Dick Grayson, who is sort of our nominal leader here, is basically still a teenager, know, and by the season two, he has grown up into a...
Yeah, he's the boss. He's the
right,
Batman
he's the boss,
the
but
team,
he's also like in his early 20s or late teens or something. So he's they physically change his model, right? Like he goes from being like a short little kid to an adult. And season three, they jump a little bit into the future again and just have, especially because after season two, which was when it got canceled and it got ended on a cliffhanger for several years before they brought it back, which was kind of an interesting, and then they decided to do that time jump in the show as well, which I think really helps.
Okay, I'm going to have to try to find a way to watch that because, I mean, my understanding is that it got canceled because they weren't selling enough toys.
That's what I heard as well.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Which is,
that's why they canceled the Green Lantern one too, isn't it? Isn't that why they canceled the Green Lantern animated series too?
And yet I still can't get a Star Trek Discovery phaser. They do not sell one. I want one so bad. I would pay like $75 for one.
You heard
it. You know what?
I was like going to buy a $15 comm badge or whatever, insignia badge, but man, I'm not going that far.
I'm about to go forge myself a phaser and win $75 on the
time. That's like I'm getting to the point where like, well, I guess I got to get a 3D printer now.
That is literally the only answer, yes.
John, have you seen any of these animated things?
Well, I think you guys have been talking about this, and I saw, Dan, I think you got me into this a few years ago, and I did watch the first two seasons of it, but it's been so long, I can't really remember it.
Okay. Did you watch the Justice League stuff?
I can't remember which. Well, see, I watched one of them, remember which one it was.
Well, Justice League, it's basically the continuation of the Batman and Superman animated series. It's I think it is Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, and
it is
basically that's part of the DCAU.
So how long ago did Young Justice air?
Young Justice aired
three. Yeah, sorry.
I'm gonna look it up because it's been a little while.
My guess is it ended 3 years ago, and the first one was 5 years ago.
The first season was first released in 2010.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
God,
nine years ago.
Old. Why am I so old?
And the second season came out in 2012.
Dying. Hang on. I've got to start digging my own grave. I won't be finished by the time you've.
And ended in 2013. So season three, which started this year. So it was about almost 6 years since the season two had finished. And apparently it does claim on Wikipedia anyways that the is on Cartoon Network. I've seen it only on the DC Universe thing, but apparently it may also be on Cartoon Network.
I don't know. I got an email up here in Canada about like one of these streaming services is going to start.
Was there a movie or something in between two and three?
No,
there was nothing.
No, it got it right. Basically
well,
went
see,
off
I can't,
the air.
No, I can't.
Well,
did
the
you watch
is,
Justice League or Justice League Unlimited?
I don't remember. That's the thing.
Those were on
was there,
Netflix
okay,
here
was
for
there
a while.
Was there a thing where
amazing.
Somebody takes over like the main superheroes and they have to fight the main superheroes?
That sounds plausible in some form.
Okay, well,
sounds
anyway.
Plausible. I feel like that is like
was hey, Red Tornado the leader at some point?
Yes,
like,
yes. Red Tornado
yes.
was sort of their mentor.
Yes. He was there as the supervision, and that didn't go well because he got that he did the he fell into the data trap where he gets
he got taken over by somebody.
Right.
Then I have seen this. But I should watch it again because it's been, been.
It's very good. And especially
five, 6 years or something.
I agree with Guy. The second season, which deals with an invading alien called The Reach, is really good.
And maybe it's I just saw the first season.
Yeah.
So the second season is remarkably smart. If you have paid any sort of attention to, I was going to say American politics, but global politics over the past couple of years.
I hear things, guy.
Yeah, this is it is.
I try not to, but I do.
Yeah, it is remarkably on point. It, not that I think an alien power is invading America, but
I'm not an alien.
I'm not ruling it out.
But I'm not ruling it out either. Right? Yeah. Like there's a lot about messaging in that season, which is an interesting choice for a cartoon, essentially for kids to enjoy. And I think they do a really remarkable job with a lot of nuance, and I think they do it really well. So, if you like watching S.H.I.E.L.D. or Arrow, I think you will get a lot out of Young Justice season 2.
I will say full credit to one of the creators of the show, who is Greg Weissman, who also created one of my favorite animated shows, Gargoyles, which is another show that punches above its weight. And Greg Weissman's, his impact there, I think, can't be overstated. He is a really great writer, and he manages to capture these kinds of interpersonal relationships and stuff exceptionally well, and do like complex and nuanced themes in a show that doesn't seem like it should be about those things.
It shouldn't be able to contain those, right? So I watched Gargoyles as it came out as a kid, but not all of it. Yeah. And you know,
I devoured it. That was the first show I like followed. Like, I tried to find out when new episodes were coming out. I was getting on like mailing lists and stuff, because that was the era.
It was way too late for me, but like, whatever, it would come on and I'd happen to watch it. It has always been a remarkable work that I mean to revisit. It on the surface seems dumb. My understanding is that it is not dumb.
Yeah, I tried to briefly do a show on The Incomparable about it, which we recorded one episode before I got totally subsumed with all the other stuff going on in life. But it's on my list of things to go back to. So one of these moments, I might relaunch that podcast and try to actually finish it. But it's a good show. It's a good show.
Yeah. Aline's a big fan too, right?
We have a bunch of people. I mean, I had Glenn on that episode. Aline was on it. Yeah, there were a bunch. I think Chip Southworth is a big fan. There are a bunch of people on it who are fans of it. And it's a great show. Highly recommend it.
I know that I like it. I just don't know enough about it. And the fact that so many people that are well spoken and can articulate why they like something, that appeals to me. It calls to me to revisit it, basically.
I'll tell you, that show made me interested in reading Shakespeare, which was not something that I was super enthused about, because there is a lot of Shakespearean reference and stuff in that. I went and read a play because that show got me interested in it. So, you know what? That's pretty good.
Damn, Star Trek VI should have been all this Shakespeare you needed.
I was going to say...
Or not to be.
Fingers crossed that when the Disney Plus series when the Disney Plus streaming service rolls around, that it's available for streaming there. It may be on Amazon Prime right now. I think I saw it. I had to buy the DVDs, and then they only put out like 2/3 of the series on DVD for years, and it was like finally that last volume I think came out, but it was years after the first two had, which was annoying as hell. Anything else you guys want to mention for Superhero Sweep? Anything you guys been watching, reading?
I've been watching Doom Patrol, and it's great, and I want to finish it, and I actually want to... I think I'm one out, maybe two out. They keep landing, and to be perfectly honest, I haven't gone to read how many to expect. That is a very, very good show.
Yeah, I need to get back to that.
I don't think it's as good as S.H.I.E.L.D. necessarily, but it is not a fight show at all. A show about a bunch of weirdos. So when I was reading the Doom Patrol comics, one of the craziest notions was there's a street that just named Danny, that moves around. It's a sentient street, and it has a bunch of people in it, and they're all sort of different. They're all, and I don't like to use the word different, but it is a safe place for people who express themselves in ways that may not be typical for the environment that they find them, or the culture that they find themselves in. And it is amazing. That, as a comic book thing, that blew my mind back in, I don't know when, 89, 90, something like mm-hmm. that. As a TV show, I'm like, that is amazing. That is like, they basically do a Stonewall thing. And I'm like, that's just great. I love it. It's so great. This show is not about beat-em-ups. It's not about fight, fight, fight. It is about a bunch of people struggling with their
baggage.
Their baggage, how people see them.
Mm-hmm.
And as a viewer, you're sort of like, well, wait, you're all normal people, except, you know, not really, because you're a robot. You're a brain and a robot body, like the, you know. But like,
whoa.
But,
let's not.
But sorry. Spoiler alert.
Let's not get judgmental, people.
Yeah. But the emotions and the reality of the characters rings true. They did a very good job on this. I think Titans let me down. This is actually just a remarkable work of television. I don't know how it got made. It is bananas, and it's great. I really, really appreciate it. So
it's a little bit more like Legion than anything else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but less like you got to stare at it the whole time to understand what's going on. There are stuff that like you really do need to like pay attention to some things, and there like I've only seen an episode and a half or really, but I did find myself going back to things like rewinding a bit to figure out what the heck actually happened.
Yeah, it's intricate and it's smart and it's
definitely, was that a donkey?
Right, it is. I know, it doesn't make any sense. And here's the thing: you've got Alan Tudyk doing an impression of Mark Hamill doing the Joker, which is amazing. It's really good.
Well, maybe I can watch all of this in that week I have left.
Sure.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, you got a lot.
Well, you know what? If you keep selling T-shirts, maybe
you got nothing to do this week, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest. I've taken to signing up for even like if I just sign up for a month of a streaming service. You know, a lot of times it's like the slightly more than the cost of say renting a movie from iTunes. So I kind of view it like, yeah, I'll sign up for a month of DC Universe and then I'll watch a bunch of stuff and then I'll unsubscribe, right? And like,
yeah,
I can come back and do that later too. Like that for me,
I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
It works really well. I mean, the experience of being able to do that through the iTunes store, and this is maybe for another podcast, but the experience of being able to turn that sort of on and off actually works really well. Like the other night, this is totally off topic, but the other night I went and I really wanted to watch Fallout, the latest Mission Impossible movie. It's not streaming anywhere. I had to either I was gonna have to buy it for like $20, which I was not prepared to do, or it was streaming on one service, Epics, which I didn't currently have. And I was like, all right, it's gonna cost me $5 or $6 or whatever, but that's what it would cost me to rent the movie anyways on iTunes. So I just signed up for a month and be like, fine, I'll sign up and I'll cancel it, and that's fine. I can watch a couple other things while I have it. But I think it's really nice to be able to just sort of flip those things on and off.
Yeah, I think if you want to do that amount of work,
but it's pretty easy.
You gotta remember.
My problem is remembering, yeah.
I usually set a calendar reminder immediately, or I just go in, and what you can do in most of the cases, if you do it through iTunes, is just cancel the subscription immediately, and you still have it, it just won't auto-renew.
Oh, true, yeah.
I do want to make a point, and this is definitely 100% not for personal gain at all. Everybody should buy everything through iTunes. I have no personal interest in that at all.
Sure, yeah, no, that makes sense.
I swear on this.
Please, use our affiliate link.
With my heart on this boxing glove arrow, I promise you.
Do not cheapen the boxing glove arrow.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I shouldn't do that. That's true.
All right.
That
one, all right.
That means something.
Yeah. We should probably move to letters page before we run out of time here. We do have a request. A letter has come over the transom from listener David Snyder, who has said, please wildly speculate about the Sandman series that's reportedly close to a deal with Netflix. So I will start by saying, if you are not familiar with Sandman, it is, I would classify it as the magnum opus of Neil Gaiman, written in the late 80s, early 90s, I want to say.
Or
at least when it started.
Late 80s.
Have you guys
88, somewhere around there.
I want to say 88 or 89, but I'll have to go look. Have you guys read Sandman?
Yeah, a long time ago, but I mean, I think I have the whole first run.
I bought everyone as it came out.
I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Wow.
But I haven't read it in a long time.
Yeah, I borrowed a bunch of it because my best friend in high school was super into comics, and he tried to get me to read it. I think actually in a interesting bit of crossover with a previous segment, the first one I ever read was the issue about Shakespeare, where it's called Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
My friend knew I was big in Shakespeare at that point, and so he gave that to me, and I thought that was amazing. And then I think I just borrowed all the trades off him. I currently only own the first two Absolute volumes, which are like the heavy hardcover ones, which are not great for rereading, unfortunately, because they're gigantic hardcovers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think, I don't know if it's on, I mean, I have that subscription to DCU. Is it on DCU? Seems like it should be.
I don't know. So I bought them all as they came out. I think they're in my parents' basement, but that's when I was working at a
you think that
bookshop.
You know, you should go
well
check.
I think that, but here's the thing. Rene Ritchie
threw all those out.
Rene Ritchie actually, like, many years ago loaned me his Absolute volumes, and they are sitting, like, I can go find them. They're within like 10 feet from me,
and I've moved.
I've taken them to Ottawa. And I've got his Dark Knight stuff too.
I think honestly,
I like Rene is so nice that he'll never be like, hey, look, you've got about $400 worth of comic books. Can I have them back?
Guy, we made a deal after we finished the last show that we would no longer do any kidnapping. So really,
you didn't kidnap Rene.
No, but you kidnapped his stuff.
You kidnapped his
property.
Yeah,
but I didn't. But, you know, it was years ago. He's fine.
Statute of limitations has expired.
It's fine. Here's the thing. I probably need to buy him new ones because... I don't know. They've been sitting in the sun.
I mean, you should clearly buy all of us new ones is what you should do. I think that's only fair.
Yeah. Let me just throw money around. That's totally cool. Sandman is an amazing work. How will it translate to the TV? I don't know. I really, really feared when Lucifer was going to get made into a TV show, and I did not want that to happen. I was like, this is a horrible idea. I don't think it's great. You can't take that kind of work and make it into a TV show. And they did, and I really, really enjoy that show.
It's totally different
from the comics. Yeah.
There are some trappings that are vaguely the same, like characters who have the same names, and there's like a premise. But other than that, it is totally
like,
different show.
Beyond a broad sort of like sketch, it's totally different. It is a police procedural. It is more akin, Dan, I think maybe you'll agree to this. It's more akin to Castle than the actual comic book.
With like supernatural, you know, veneer.
Yeah. And it works for me. I really enjoy it. I've introduced it to other people and they enjoy it too. It is different from the comics. How do you do that with Sandman? I don't know, but if somebody has the insight of how to take, not literally the Sandman comics as they were written, but the notion.
The essence.
The essence of the essence of the Eternals. Man, we don't smoke enough weed on this podcast. We got to be. What were they popping on Kitson?
Puffs. You need some puffs.
We got to. We got to pass the puffs around to be able to talk about Sandman. So 3 puffs in. Let me tell you. You know, Sandman could work as a TV thing, but I think you're going to have to adapt it in a way that is maybe Twilight Zone-y. I don't know. Like, there's an angle. I don't know what it is. I am curious to see what they come up with.
I think what you do not want is to have someone try to do sort of a slavish, you know, adaptation of trying to, like, you know, you don't want Zack Snyder adapting Watchmen, right? Where it's like, let's pull frames out of the comic book.
I actually like that Watchmen movie, and I will defend it.
That's the only thing of his that I like at all.
And
let's move on. You're right.
But Sandman, I think, is just so it's all over the place, right? Like, it hops genres, especially in the graphic novels themselves, which change artists. The styles change wildly from volume to volume. The storyline is kind of non-linear in the way that it approaches various things.
Right.
There are so many little side plots and like characters that I'm with you. I don't know how you do that. I would have said, you know, 10 years ago, I would have called it unfilmable. And I think it is filmable, but you know, you guys calling out Legion earlier is something that I think that gives me hope that you could do that in an interesting fashion, at least, like, on TV, right? Like, TV has broadened in terms of what it lets you do, but I still don't know how you capture the essence of Sandman.
10 years ago, his sister, Death, let's just rewind a little bit. Sandman is the eternal. He is sleep and
dream.
He's the dream basically.
Dream master,
just dreaming. If you're dreaming, you are with him. There's Destiny, and there's a bunch of others, but one of them is Death, his sister. Little sister, right? Yeah.
Yes.
But whatever, they're eternal, so close enough. I would fear 10 years ago that she would have been a punk sex bomb of just, you know, like, a bunch of sexual energy, and that is not the character that we see in the books. I have a little more faith now that, like, 10 years later, and given all of the TV that we've seen, that that character could be portrayed as in the comic book, she's a very concerned, very loving person, really. She's an understanding entity. Which is a little bit not what you expect, given that her role is to, you know,
kill everybody.
but she does it with a caring and sincerity that has a weight to that character, while still she loves life, and I don't know how you could have done that 10 years ago, but given the past 10 years of the way television has evolved, I've got a little bit more faith that they could deal with Dream, deal with Death, and deal with all of that, these as entities, as characters, as people, more effectively than they might have been able to. I still think it's a risk, but I'm intrigued. I'm excited to see what they're going to do.
I think so. Also, just to get like a little nuts and boltsy, like, they've been trying to make an adaptation of Sandman on both movies and TV shows for decades.
Yeah.
Like, it has always been stuck in development hell.
Well, because here's the thing: you can't read that and not be like, "Oh man, this is amazing."
Right,
and I want to do something with it. You just can't. It is an incredible work.
Yeah. At one point, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was attached to it for some films that kind of tanked. You know, a variety of things have happened. Neil Gaiman is a hot property now, right? You know, The American Gods is running. Good Omens ran on Amazon Prime. It's very good. I recommend it. So I think he's got a lot of cachet in these circles right now. I was looking up the guy who's supposedly attached as the showrunner. His name is Alan Heinberg. He wrote the Wonder Woman movie. Okay. Hmm. He developed the couple TV shows, The Catch. And he's just written for a bunch of different shows, including Scandal and Grey's Anatomy, The OC, Gilmore Girls, Sex and the City, Party of Five. These are not exactly the credits I would think, but, you know, fair credit. Maybe he's a huge Sandman fan. Totally fine.
Yeah, wait a second.
I'm just telling you the shows he's worked on.
Craig Mazin wrote Scary Movie 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Hangover 3. And then he wrote Chernobyl. So. Yeah.
So sometimes you just haven't found the right fit. So I'm certainly not writing this guy off. But yeah, I don't. Other than Wonder Woman, I don't think I've seen anything, you know, that he has spent a lot of time working on, except Wonder Woman and Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls is a great show. So, but I don't know. It's not like he's an instant name recognition guy. David Goyer and Gaiman are both attached to executive produce, but they were also attached to the screen, so likely that's some of that's just sort of left over from who bought the rights and who was working on various
things. Well, some of that just has to be like, you know what, Gaiman's going to end up being attached to anything unless he pulls an Alan Moore and he's like, I'm out of here, I don't want it.
Right.
You know, like, even if he has no input, they're going to have his name all over it because...
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, I'm sure he will have some, but I have also heard that after working on Good Omens and American Gods, he doesn't want to do showrunning anymore, which is fair.
Alan Smithy's Sandman.
Yeah,
Alan Smithy's. That sounds
good. So, yeah, I think we're all kind of... We're probably all on the same page of if you can pull it off... it could be really impressive, but it is a degree of difficulty.
I'm glad I don't have that job.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love Sandman. There's a few stories within it in particular that are some of my favorites.
Right. You can't tell the whole thing. You need one, right? You need to put one out. My guess would be one that goes through time.
I don't even know how you pull parts out of that because so much of it, like, you know, you think about like Fables and Reflections or like a bunch of series of like vignettes. Mm-hmm. I think of, I can't remember the title of the issue, but there's his friend Hob, who he meets.
Yep. He doesn't die, right?
Yeah. One of my favorite stories is that is the main issue that focuses on him, but it's a standalone, right? Like it's
that's
one
exactly.
Episode.
You know what? That's exactly the one I was thinking about. Make a movie out of that.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily make a movie out of that, but it's not, it's like doing that as one episode of a TV show, even. Plus, you've got, you've got crossover with DC characters. Like, John Constantine shows up a bunch in Sandman. Like, are you going to get Matt Ryan? Are you going to get to somebody else? I don't know what
you're
going to
get
there.
Matt Ryan. Come on, he's Constantine at this point.
He's great, but I also could understand not wanting, like, to hew too closely to that.
Yeah, then you're in that universe,
I mean,
right?
Batman and Robin make appearances. Superman makes an appearance, at various points.
They do make a Batman reference in Doom Patrol recently.
Nice.
One of them gets kidnapped. He's Cyborg, actually, from, you know.
Yeah.
Cyborg from the Justice League. He's captured. And Robot Man, Brendan Fraser at one point, is just like, well, he's got a computer. Can he just text Batman to get him out? Why do we have to go get him?
That's fair. I ask myself that question
Batman should just go get him.
Every time John gets kidnapped, I ask myself that.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Maybe I don't want to.
That's all I got for letters. As always, we remind you that you can shoot us an email at biff@theincomparable.com or hit us up at biffcast on Twitter. I almost said on Arrow. That doesn't make any sense.
No. You know what still screws me up is when you say
the Arrow social network. Sure.
Yeah, that's right.
It still screws me up when you say welcome back to Biff. And I'm like, what? What show is that?
Me too.
I've never heard of that.
Someday we'll get used to it.
Yeah, eventually.
But not today. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. We will be back next week to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 6, Episode Number 8, Collision Course, Part 1. Very exciting. I would like to thank my co-host, as always, John Maltz. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure every single damn time.
Every single time. That's right. Guy English, delighted to talk to you as well.
So no joke, we are in contact with the original producers of Time Traveling Dead, and we will have a Bible. they're giving us the writer's Bible.
The series Bible? Wow.
Yeah.
How'd you get, what did you have to give away for that? Do I want to know?
Oh,
did you trade them Renee's?
That's where Berlanti went.
That's Renee's Sandman volumes. Did you trade Renee's Sandman?
I gave them Renee's Sandman volume. Yeah. And I went back in time and got Cleopatra's firstborn. But, you know, whatever.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, we will. I'm sure you will all be on tenterhooks about that one. Look forward to that at some point in the undefined future or past. It's time travel.
Maybe it's already there.
It could already be. Check your podcast feed.
Ask your dad.
I'll tell you right now, if you're smiling now, it's because of something we're going to say funny next time.
We promise. It will be. There will be something funny next time. But until then, thank you all out there for listening and for your support, and we will see you next week. Every time Guy starts his recording, I picture one of the X-Wing pilots in A New Hope who's like, no, I can hold it together. I can hold it together. I got it.
I've got it. I've definitely got it. I am definitely not on screen for only 3 seconds. I 100% have this.
Yeah, right. I'm a lasting part of this franchise.
People will remember the name.
I am the hero. You haven't seen me until...